G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events. This is 2020 on Vision.
Well, some insight today into Christian faith at the very top of Australian political leadership. Former Prime Minister Scott Morrison is getting ready to release a memoir. What's different about this memoir is that he's chosen to focus on how his Christian faith influenced his life, his decisions, his time in Parliament, and those turbulent years as Prime Minister. It's due for release in May. The book is entitled Plans for Your Good, A Prime Minister's Testimony of God's Faithfulness. There have been many Christian Prime Ministers in Australia, but it's become a point of fascination, especially to the mainstream media, that Scott Morrison was Australia's first evangelical Pentecostal Prime Minister. In his valedictory speech to the Parliament just a month ago, Scott Morrison used the opportunity to call the nation back to God. Well, it is our privilege today to welcome former Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Mr. Morrison, a special welcome along to 2020.
Thanks, Neil. It's good to be with you.
If you don't mind, I'll call you Scott. Scott,
sure.
For listeners, the title of your book, Plans for Your Good. From the scripture in Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11, for a lot of people, this is one of their favourite scriptures. Is this one of yours too?
Yeah, it is. I have many, but when I wrote the book, it was originally had a working title of many names. One was How Good Is God, which is something that I think Australians understand, but American audiences don't really understand and how we use that phrase. I refer to it in the book, but what came back as I'd finished the work and we were talking about a title, I kept coming back to this verse and I kept coming back to the fundamental question is whether we believe this or not. If we believe that verse, well, our life is very different. And if we don't believe that verse, then it's also very different. So I think it's one of those verses in the Bible which really sort of put the clear question of faith before us. And, of course, faith is what we believe, and what we believe is not how we feel. It's what we choose and what we do. And I've always found that verse very encouraging, but at the same time, very directing, that we can be confident that when we're on his plan, that plan takes us towards him, which is where we want to go.
Well, the rest of that verse says from Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." So this memoir, Scott Morrison, not a typical memoir for a prime minister, but a focus around faith. Give us some insight here into what drives you to talk about faith and not perhaps putting the boot into your old political foes.
Yeah, well, I never had really any plans to do a memoir at all. The memoir is, a regurgitation of one's political activities, which I think would be quite tedious. I'm not a big reader of political autobiographies because, frankly, as politicians, it's very hard for us to sort of step back. And, biographies is a different story. And if anyone ever goes down that path, well, that will be for them and history. But this was not a story about what I've done, but this my story about what God has done for me. That's the difference. It's a testimony of his faithfulness, not mine. that's something I'm very sure of, what he's done. And so it's really to bear witness to that and to encourage others, regardless of what role you're in, whether you're a prime minister or you're a teacher or you're a police officer or you're running a small business or you're looking after elderly parents or kids or whatever vocation or role in life you find yourself in, he's got a plan. And what we seek to do is get on that plan.
Scott, I don't know whether you get as many opportunities to share your own personal story of faith, coming to faith in Christ, but perhaps the shortened version, how do you describe those early inklings that there must be something more than just what I can see? Those thoughts about who was instrumental in sharing their own faith with you. Give us an insight into your personal faith journey.
Well, it really started in my family. I grew up in a Christian family. My parents, both very active in their local church, which was a Presbyterian church initially, and then it turned into a Uniting Church. And I was involved in Boys Brigade all those years ago. It's still around today. We were at a camp down in Melbourne, and, you know, I'd heard the gospel many times. I discussed it many times with my parents, and my older brother, who was a Christian, he came along to the Billy Graham Crusade. My father used to take me every single night to that Billy Graham Crusade over there in Randwick, which wasn't too far from where we lived. And I remember one night I wanted to go down the front with my brother, and my father stopped me because he knew I was just following my brother. I wasn't following God. I was following my brother. And come. And it did down in Melbourne at the end of that camp, and there was a call put out. I talk about this in the book. I couldn't recall what the pastor said, the minister said on that day. All I know is one thing. I know I'm sitting on the seat. The next thing you know, I'm standing up and giving my life. And it was a life changing moment. And there have been many since then, because it's, while our point of salvation is a key point in our faith journey, it's not the only key transitioning point, I think. There are many transformational points we go through in our faith journey as God reveals himself to us and we enter into deeper and deeper relationship with him, which is what the whole Christian journey is about. It's about our relationship with him and deepening it each and every day.
People were very excited that there would be a Pentecostal prime minister leading Australia. But then there would be some who would say, I'm disappointed when you became more political than Pentecostal. And some might have thought, we're expecting more from a Christian Pentecostal prime minister to dig in deep. How do you reflect on even the critics, but even the journey as it has unfolded?
Well, I never saw myself as a Pentecostal prime minister. I don't really see myself as a Pentecostal Christian as such. I go to an evangelical Pentecostal church. I've been to Baptist churches. I've been to Uniting churches. I love going to Maronite churches. I talk about in the book, if your church is preaching Christ and a relationship with him and loving others and salvation through faith alone, well, we're going to the same church. I was elected as a liberal. I was elected by the people of Australia, not because of my faith. That just happens to be who I am, and I've always thought to be transparent about that. I think we have to be very careful about the blend of politics and faith. I was a Christian in politics. I wasn't a political Christian. There's a difference between those two things. And I sought to live out my faith in my vocation, as you do in yours, as people do in lots of walks of life. And I think it's very dangerous to create expectations around some sort of political agenda as Christians.
Let's talk faith and politics. You say that Australians have put far too much faith in imperfect politicians, imperfect institutions. And now they're disillusioned, perhaps, because all faith in the secularized government doesn't necessarily bring the outcomes that people hope will come. Any thoughts here?
Yeah, look, the point I'm trying to make is that our whole society was based on Judeo-Christian values about the dignity of the individual human being and the made in God's image, by his hand for his glory. I talk about that. And when we lose touch with our identity as individual human beings with true worth and value and loved, then what are we basing everything else on? I mean, what are human rights based on if it's not on that? And when we disconnect from that, what do we replace it with? I mean, the hunger and thirst for something to be sort of directing and controlling doesn't go away. And so what I've observed at my time in politics, and it particularly accelerated I think over the last 5 years and over the entire more than 16 years I was in Parliament, people look to government as some sort of salvation for everything, an answer to every solution. And it's not. It's part of a solution to the many challenges that we face in our society. It has a role to play, and it's important that Christians are part of that, as Daniel was part of Nebuchadnezzar's government, as Joseph was part of Pharaoh's government. I mean, there have always been Christians and people of faith working in civil administration. But what I fear and am concerned about is when you take God out of the culture, what do you replace him with? And my point is, we've cut ourselves off as a society in the West, not just Australia, it's all around Western society. We sort of feel like the society feels like it's grown up from God, as if it's sort of come out of Sunday school, and we don't need that anchor anymore. Well, what I think we're doing as a society is now we're just completely untethered and we're adrift. And where are we drifting? That's the question. And I don't think government isn't going to solve that. Because it's fundamentally about values and principles. And when we step away from those, then our society can be in a bit of strife. What is the basis for the decisions we make, the choices and the goals that we pursue? That is the trouble I have with where things are at now.
Australians are secularising very quickly, and the outcome of that secular state may well be summed up in the thought of the outcome will be pessimistic, a pessimism that goes hand in hand with the secular state. And that contrasts, doesn't it, with the optimism that comes from the verse that you chose from Jeremiah. Sure. About God being for good and not for harm, a future that is filled with hope. So without God, are we stuck in pessimism? Do we have to rediscover that there's something that's going to bring the hope and the optimism that we need as a nation for the future?
Well, I hope Christians wouldn't need to rediscover that. I would hope that Christians were full of hope and full of optimism. And it does trouble me a bit when I see some Christians get terribly pessimistic about this and get very worked up. I was speaking at my own church last Sunday, and I said, I don't think God called us to shout at people in capital letters on Facebook. I don't think that's part of the plan. And we've got to be very careful about how we engage in these things. I actually think Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are really good examples of what we should do as living as Christians in what is an increasingly secularized society. I said in my my maiden speech to Parliament, secularism is not the national religion. There is no national religion, and secularism has no greater claim to the nation's faith base than any other faith. It's important in a free society that we get to choose what we believe, and I believe God would have it no other way. So I think we have a message of hope. I think we have a message of peace. I think we have a message of empowerment for all people. I think we have a message of diversity and inclusion, one that reaches out to everybody. Everyone is welcome. When you look at the church today, in the West, the church is criticized for being white and 50. Well, that's just not the case. The church is Chinese. The church is Iranian. The church is African. The church is male. It's female. It's old. It's young. That is the nature of the church. It is the most inclusive, most diverse community of faith anywhere in the world. And this is something that I think brings hope to the challenges. People are seeking this. The problem is the truth that underpins it. And that's why it says in the Gospels that, he will be a rock of offence. The truth of Jesus Christ is an offence, I think, to what I'd call the religion of secularism. The religion of secularism is different to having a secular state. And I think these two things are often confused. But as Christians, we need to understand the fact that we live in a democracy. And that gives us no greater right to impose a minority, and we are a minority now, a minority perspective on the entire culture. And I think we need to learn how we live like that in the West today, not compromising on our key principles and values. I mean, in a representative democracy, which is supposed to respect and value diversity and minorities. Well, frankly, we are one now. And it's very important that we are vibrant. Rod Dreher writes in the Benedict Option about this, and I think he makes very good points about it, about how we are to live as Christians in an increasingly secularized Western society.
And we have some adjusting to do. You're offering wisdom in your new memoir that's coming out in May, and you're addressing some big questions in there. The who am I questions about purpose, the how should I live, finding a pathway, and what should I hope for embracing your future? Is this an endeavour here to pass on wisdom from our nation's highest office to those who might aspire to shape our nation's future?
I'd say it's reflections of someone who has lived a fairly unique life. Not too many people have gone on to be Prime Minister of Australia. There's only been 31 of us in our entire history. And that has been a rather unique journey that I've been on. But the lessons that I've learned along this way about God's faithfulness are ones that I want to share. And that's really the purpose of this. You've gone over some of the questions. Every chapter asks a question. In the last section on the questions of hope, I deal with what's holding us back from our hope. And I talk about the importance of forgiveness and how important forgiveness is in a Christian's life. And I recount the story of how I got to know the beautiful people, Danny and Layla Abdullah and Bridget Saker and Craig McKenzie, who lost their children, Bridget and Danny and Layla, and how they lost their children in a terrible accident, which took three of their six children and took took Bridget's only daughter, and how they were able to be faithful and forgive, and how that has transformed the lives of the young man and his family who was driving the car that day. And that's a great story that gives great glory to God. But it came from a heart of forgiveness. And, you know, in politics, I've seen a lot of people unable to get over the hurts and get over the bitterness. I talk about waiting and how we wait, because sometimes things don't turn up when we want it to. And what we learn in the waiting and how we're strengthened in the waiting. This is the way we access hope. In the first chapters, I talk about if you don't know who you are in Jesus Christ, if you don't know who you are as created in the image of God by his hand for his glory, then you are building your life on the wrong foundations, and you have to be sure about what all this means for you and how it leads you in your faith. All of this helped me deal with so many different situations. It didn't mean that God then brought those situations to my preferred outcome. That's not how it works. I think sometimes we think that, oh, well, you know, if we're faithful, God will make sure it all turns out all right for me. No, that's your plan. His plan's different. His plan leads you to him and not to you. And I think, you know, if you want to be on God's plan, it'll cost you your plan. And so, you know, I won an election. I called it the miracle victory, to acknowledge God in that victory at that time. And I lost one. And I found God in both of them. And that's the point that I'm trying to share.
Scott Morrison, let's get into some of the, I said, good, bad and ugly times leading the nation as Prime Minister. Let me ask you about media. First up, you're criticised for not reining in the biases of the ABC. And there's a theory I have that perhaps that's even given rise to a lot of fueling of the growth of conservative and even Christian media. Any thoughts here from you around those critics?
Well, the ABC has just lost a lot of viewers, I think, because it's taken the path that it has. We've seen a lot of their flagship programs basically wane, and I saw a lot of that during the time I was in politics. I mean, I wouldn't be the first conservative prime minister to be accused of that. John Howard was accused of the same thing, and many others. I mean, we've all made our attempts at trying to get the ABC, I think, to be more even-handed, but I'm yet to see someone have any success with that. You know, we put people on the board, different people on the board, but it tends to run its own show. But you know, as they become, as I think you observe, more like they are, well, that just opens the door for people to go elsewhere and to listen to other voices. If they can't hear the multitude of voices on the national broadcaster, well, they will seek them elsewhere. And nothing wrong with that. It's free market. And that's the great thing about Australia. Whether that's, you know, specifically Christian voices or other politically more conservative voices. I mean, I think they've become, in many respects, their own worst enemy. And that's why I think people are just switching them off.
We could spend time talking about your achievements. And I know you do like to talk about stopping the boats, standing up to China, leading Australia through the pandemic, and, of course, striking the AUKUS pact, and, of course, involvement with the Quad. Those things are really amazing achievements. But not everyone, even in the Christian community, just because you're called Christian, will say those are good decisions that sometimes have been made. Let me ask you about being a Christian and being conservative. You're on the conservative side of politics. Often they go hand in hand. But your critics would say that you don't always act as a conservative. What are your thoughts here? Because, I mean, you followed Malcolm Turnbull, who really people describe as on the left, and some might say how much of the left, left-leaning Malcolm Turnbull, followed you into your prime ministership. Any thoughts here?
Oh, look, everyone's entitled to their opinion. All I know is people have every right to judge my policies, every single right to judge my policies, and particularly when I was in office. But no one has the authority to judge your faith and what impact your own faith has in forming the views that you do. I have no more right to judge you about how you would think about those issues as you would me. Our faith is something about our relationship between us and God. And I've never sought to presume about people's relationship with God in politics. I think trying to weld the idea of people's political partisanship to a faith position, I don't think Jesus did that. I don't think that's how it's intended to be understood. Conservative versus liberal, well, yeah, that's a secular political debate. There are moral issues that on the right, on the conservative side of politics, are very important. But equally, there are issues around justice and issues like that which are held very passionately by those on the other side of politics. I think God has a lot to say, and Jesus had a lot to say about all of those things. Sometimes we can be a bit selective in politics when we talk about faith, about which ones we think are more important. The truth is they're all important, and we need to focus on all of those. One of the things I said in my last speech in the Parliament is sometimes we spend a bit too much time trying to judge the person rather than trying to listen to what their policies are and what they're trying to do. We judge their policies about whether we think that person is a good person or a bad person. Well, frankly, in my experience, I've seen bad ideas come from what I'd describe as good people. I've seen good ideas come from bad people on occasion. In politics, you go for what works, and that's what I always tried to do, with a clear goal of enhancing the national interest. I just never really was that sought to be tribal about these things.
Let me ask you about religious freedom. This is really very much front and centre of an agenda, and certainly for our listenership, but it really is important for every Australian. Religious freedom is under attack. The Australian Law Reform Commission report into religious schools and institutions, that is a big debate that's going on right now. Your government tried to pass a religious discrimination bill, and there were reported backroom deals trading away elements of the Sex Discrimination Act that eventually saw the withdrawal. And of course, there is the commentary that suggests that Christian schools on that day were almost lost. How do you reflect on your endeavour to protect religious freedom, and what even might be coming ahead?
Well, the bill I put to the Parliament was the bill that I foreshadowed prior to the 2019 election, which protected religious schools. Absolutely protected religious schools. The only issue which was discussed and was included in that bill had to do with the non-expulsion of a student on the basis of their sexuality. Now, that was something that was supported by every single religious leader, because it just simply doesn't happen. When these issues come up in schools, religious schools, Christian schools in particular, deal with those situations in love and with care for the student and their family, as they should. And I had numerous conversations with Orthodox bishops through to other Christian pastors, and there was unanimity on that point. And so that was the only change to the Sex Discrimination Act that we put forward in that bill. Now, that bill was changed in the Parliament, including by the defection of some of the members of my own party. And the minute that happened, I withdrew the bill. I voted it down and I took it out, because I believed it would have taken religious freedom in this country backwards, not forwards. And I fear the same is true now. This is a very secular Parliament that's been elected. That's not necessarily a criticism or anything like that. It's just a simple observation. I was part of it until recently. But I would say that probably does reflect an increasingly secularised society. And Christians shouldn't be surprised about that their parliaments are becoming more secular. Look around you. Your community is becoming secular. If I would often say to Christians who would, you know, have strong views about this, want to change the nature of society? Be the church. Love one another. Let the gospel speak into your community. Don't subcontract out what you want the society to be to politicians or your pastor, for that matter. You're a Christian. You're called to be salt and light. And, you know, it's a job for all of us. And that's how, you know, things change.
Let's hear from listeners. Let's take a call or two. Nathan is in Darwin. Hey, Nathan, welcome along.
Good morning, man. How are you going?
Very well.
Well, thanks.
What's your question, Nathan?
Not really a question. Just wanted to say thank you for the interview. Just being blessed listening to you guys, sharing your faith. And, yeah, definitely Scott Morrison's journey is amazing.
Nathan, thank you. Thank you so much for your call. Scott, thoughts here for Nathan?
Well, I just hope it's encouraging for you, Nathan. I think these forums are good for that. And I just encourage you on your journey. I used to love coming up to the Territory. It was one of the great things of being PM. I got to meet people all around the country. My last Anzac Day was actually up at Darwin. And that was quite an experience. I've been in many parts of the country on Anzac Day, but I got to tell you, being up in Darwin is a very special experience. I mean, it's first and, you know, it is a defence town, and there's a lot of people serving members of the Defence Forces up there. And as we get closer to Anzac Day, I know it'll be a very special time. It comes first.
Nathan, thank you so much for your call. 1-800-316-316. Let's take another call. Rod is in Brisbane. Hello, Rod. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
What are your
morning,
thoughts?
Scott.
Hey, Rod.
I was just reflecting back to that 2018 election when it seemed like it was an unwinnable election. And I just remember in your victory speech that you gave, you call it a miracle win. And I believe you said you would burn for the Australian people, especially the Christians. But I don't believe I saw much burning going on, maybe some smouldering. Because I do remember when Australia was burning, you actually went on holidays. But you had the opportunity to make the Judeo-Christian foundation beliefs that we had built this country on as part of the law in the religious discrimination bill, but we never really saw any evidence of that being shown during your time as Prime Minister.
Rod, good thoughts there. Scott, your response?
Well, I'd have to disagree respectfully. We brought in the bill. The bill was unsuccessful. that's what you can do as a government. If you don't have the numbers in the parliament to pass the bill, the bill doesn't pass. And so, you know, we certainly did that. But what I do know is each and every day that I was in that job, I would be praying, I'd be seeking guidance, and I'd be seeking to do the best thing I possibly could for Australia. You make reference to the time that Jenny and I and the family took a few days off. You may recall that the bushfires started in September of that year. They didn't start in December. We had been on fire grounds for months and months and months. Prior to that, we'd been in floodwaters, and prior to that, we'd been in drought, and we're about to be hit by COVID. It's a demanding role, and it's one that we committed ourselves 100% to, and we gave it every single thing we had. So I'm sorry you feel that way, but, you know, feel free to judge politicians, but as I said before, our faith and how we stand for our faith, there's only one person who gets to judge that.
Rod in Brisbane, thank you so much for your call. 1-800-316-316. If you have a question or some input for our former Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, let me ask you about COVID. This is a very divisive issue as we reflect back. Some will say there was damage to our democracy, and people will say Scott Morrison could be the reason why that damage is there. Some critics will say...
Why would they say that?
Well, because of an abrogation of responsibility to workplaces and to the states around the mandatory nature of the vaccines.
How did we do that?
Well, because when those responsibilities were, I remember the day when you said workplaces will have the opportunity to say whether or not they'll expect a mandatory vaccination or not. And then the states jumped in, and it seems to be that you had Western Australia with Mark McGowan closing the borders, Dan Andrews, and all of the issues there, Anastasia Palaszczuk blocking borders as well. So it was like a opening of the floodgates for countless Australians then losing their jobs over mandatory vaccinations. And any thoughts here?
A couple of things, just to correct you on a couple of things. The Commonwealth has no power whatsoever under our constitution on mandating of vaccines. None. And they have no power to prevent the mandating of vaccines. The Commonwealth government only agreed to mandating of vaccines in the case of aged care workers and those working in vulnerable health settings. All the other mandating of vaccines, they were decisions taken entirely by state governments, often unilaterally, without any support from the federal government. I think what COVID showed, and John Howard made this point, that it revealed the powers that state governments have. I think there was a view during COVID that somehow the Prime Minister could override the power on if matters. And not true. Simply not true. It was put around. And it was particularly put around in Christian circles. And that very disappointing. But it wasn't. And what we had to do was try of government working together as best as we possibly could. Now, the outcome of that, 100,000, over a million jobs saved, the lowest rate, one of the lowest rates of death of any country in the world. And we just had a independent study done the other day showed that Australia was in the world. Life expectancy rate actually increased. And at the same time, by suicide in the 2020 and 2020 fell by over. So I would say that the results show, no, it wasn't perfect, but countries was. We were dealing in a of the state. I'll give you an example. We were very opposed to schools, and I was pleased Western Australia and South do it of schools and did it in New South Wales, Queensland, and Victoria. So I think there is somewhat of a of who and shouldn't have to use the powers they have, get the country to work. If you take a look overseas, the
Now, I'll just jump in here. I'm thinking that there might be a little bit of breaking up that's happening. And so apologies, that's something beyond our control for listeners. Just a few minutes for our conversation remaining, Scott. I wanted to ask you about your future plans. You'll be working in defence and global strategy. You will be spending lots more time at home and husband and dad with your family. What's the big plan ahead? How much insight will you be bringing to the challenges that are ahead for us geopolitically, with all of the unsettledness of our region now? How do you hope to make an input here?
Well, I'm no longer in public life. I'm a private citizen, and I'm advising a number of corporate clients around the world about what's happening in the world, in the Indo-Pacific, and that's what my business now does. And I'm looking forward to that time. I mean, as you rightly say, as you go through different seasons in your life, then, you know, other priorities become more important, and particularly after the sacrifice of my family over a very long period of time. I welcome the opportunity to now invest heavily back into them and their futures, and my daughters who are growing up. They're in high school now, and I'm really enjoying that and looking forward to that. But where I still get the opportunity, I do still sit on a number of global think tanks in the United States that are very focused on these global security issues. I'll always consistently be calling out what is happening in China and the coercive actions of the Communist Party there. And I think we have to be very careful not to see an equivalency in a Communist Party system in China and what is occurring in the Western world. There are a range of reasons why we should be resisting the coercion and intimidation of the Chinese Communist Party government in China, not just to protect our own sovereignty, but this is a system of government, an autocratic system of government, a totalitarian system of government, which is not good for the liberty of the people who live there. And so in the West, we need to stand up for those values, and that's what I sought to do each and every day, and I'll continue to do that, but I just won't be doing that in a partisan sense in Australia anymore. I have the view that once you've been Prime Minister, you had your go, and that you need to let those who follow you go and do their job, and it's not my job to give a running commentary on them. That's what the Leader of the Opposition's for, and all of my colleagues who remain in politics. They can do that. I think as a former Prime Minister, you seek to advance the national interest when you can, but for most part, you offer your advice in private, and you don't become a domestic commentator on these issues.
Some of your predecessors have become commentators and not always seen in a good light, especially the likes of, say, a Malcolm Turnbull. Some might even say a Paul Keating, to take two sides there. Do you think you'll pop up from time to time and put your two bobs worth in? Do you think you'll be wanting to do that and make a contribution where you can?
Well, the contribution I'm looking to make, and it's really to share with Australians. And we had, I think it was Rod who was calling before. I encourage Rod to read the book, and then he might get a better sense of really what I was doing over that period of time and how my relationship with God was affecting how I was seeking to lead the country at the time. I think that's what I'm really trying to share with other believers. We are living in a time where it's increasingly hard to be a Christian in this country. And that has been happening for a long time. And I think it's important for us to understand that what we see happen in politics and where we see our parliaments go and our laws go, it's following our society. It's following our community. And if we really want the message of Jesus Christ and the gospel to be central in our society, well, it's up to all of us. It's not a political issue. It's a belief issue. It's a living issue. It's a day-by-day issue. And we each have that responsibility with every single interaction we have with every other fellow human being here and elsewhere.
Well, your story is evidence that being Christian is not a blockage to pursuing a political career and even hitting the top job. Let me just say how listeners can get a hold of your new book, and you can pre-order now. There is actually a website called plansforyourgood.com and a special limited release of signed copies that are available if you go through Booktopia to get a hold of your the new book. The book is called Plans for Your Good, A Prime Minister's Testimony of God's Faithfulness. You'll be able to get it at online booksellers, but plansforyourgood.com, it might be a good place to start with all sorts of detail about the book that's written by former Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Scott, thank you so much for taking some time to share your thoughts and your heart with listeners today, and I hope we'll get another opportunity sometime into the near future, perhaps on a bigger geopolitical conversation. But thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today on 2020.
Thanks a lot, Neil. All the best. God bless.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.